morning, CTV.
Good morning.
Morning.
Brenda, thanks you for that welcome. We're honored that you're here. We're going to have a great, great time today. As you know, we have our special guests, Kurt and Brenda Warner, and they basically grew up kind of in Iowa. Don't really know their story or not, but well, we got some more Iowa people here today. That's good. They met in 1993, got married in 1997. They have seven children. As I found out by reading the book, it's a great book. By the way, we sold them all out in the church library or church bookstore last night. We're going to order some more, but you can go on to Amazon.com is the best place. You want to go online and get it. Great book, very practical book. It will really help you. But one thing I found out in the book that I did not know before, and I thought I knew them pretty well, Brenda was in the Marines for 4 years. Okay.
Ooh-ah. Yeah, yeah.
So... Kurt is the quarterback, you know, on the football field, but at home, he's kind of the wimp with the kids, and I think she might be the tough one.
He said it.
We're honored they're here. Kurt, we try to reach a lot of men in this church. Kind of, I'm not going to tell you all the accolades because you know the most important thing to me is that they are incredible role models for our kids. That they are living proof of the reality of Jesus Christ in their lives on and off the field, and they have made a profound impact on this community for Jesus Christ, and we're honored for that. Kurt, start out, maybe for the guys, or of course we're finding out in the NFL the fan base of women is going up incredibly, but tell us the highlight moment for you in football, and then pick a low light.
Well, as a lot of people know through my career, that they, you know, focus a lot on the low lights, the things that have happened. You know, going through college, I sat on the bench for 4 years, worked in a grocery store. I remember probably one of the toughest things for me was when I was playing in St. Louis and had led the team to 2 Super Bowls and won a couple MVPs, and I got cut from that organization. I really thought I was going to be there forever, and that was one of the most devastating things that happened to me in my career. And then I went to New York, and after a few games, I was benched there. And then I came out here to Arizona and was benched a couple times out here. And, you know, I remember each and every time thinking, man, you know, this stinks. You know, can I ever get a break, you know, to go in my direction? But, you know, what I've come to realize through that whole process is that every one of those things that I might call a low light, so to speak, or a low point in my career, set me up for something else that I could accomplish in my career, something unique and a different way that God could use me. And so a lot of people say, well, what are your low lights? And I would point to one of those things, but in the end, now that I'm looking back, I come to realize that the biggest highlight of my career has been the opportunity to play and do some things in St. Louis that had never been done before, and then also come out here to Phoenix, Arizona, and do some things here with this organization that have never been done before. And it's unique because not very many people get an opportunity to do that once, and I was fortunate to be able to do that twice. And what I loved about it more than anything is, you know, it was great on the football field, and it was great winning and, you know, doing those kinds of things and changing an organization. But what I love about it is that I saw a community change with the football teams in both places, that a community rallied around a football team that was having success, and it changed the culture of a community. And I saw the exact same thing happen here over the last couple years. And for me, that's the greatest highlight, and the thing I'm most proud of as I leave football is to have the opportunity to do that in two different places and watch whole groups of people and families come together based on what we were able to accomplish and what we stood for as a football team.
Awesome. That's good. Tell us a little bit about your upbringing. Brenda, you guys grew up in a Christian family. Tell us about that.
At 12 years old, my family got invited to go to a church, and we really hadn't been to a church much before that, and they showed a video about the end times called Distant Thunder, and it was kind of a hokey 70s movie, but it showed the lawnmower going, and nobody was standing there, and I thought, I don't want to be left behind, and so I got scared into going down to the altar because I didn't want to basically be left behind. So my mom, dad, and my one sister all went down, got on our knees, and prayed that Jesus would come into our life and started really building that foundation. We started going to church regularly. started reading the Bible, started understanding basically what God called me to do. I knew that I was supposed to go in the Marine Corps, things like that. I really felt the foundation being built, and little did I know that I would need it later on. But so really 12 years old is when I started everything.
Wow, that's great. How about your experience, Kurt?
When I'd say a little bit different, that I grew up in more of a religious home as opposed to a spiritual home where, you know, I went to church on Sundays, but my relationship with God was me calling on Him when I needed Him. You know, when I had that tough test that I knew I wasn't prepared for, you know, I'd go to God and pray, please help me get an A on this test. Or if I had that big game that I wanted to win, I'd go to God. Or, you know, when I wanted to get a date with a pretty cheerleader, I'd go to God. And, you know, God, if you just give me this one date, you know, I'll serve you the rest of my life. That was kind of my relationship growing up. And, you know, of course, if I got any one of those things, I forgot about God the next day and was back to my life. But, you know, I was raised, you know, with a religious background, a church background, but I really didn't have a daily relationship with God until much later. You know, when I was actually 26 years old, I ran into this Marine, and she scared me to death, too. So that's how I found Jesus also. No, I'm only kidding. But she did.
No, he's not.
She did scare me a little bit, but she did challenge me in my faith and where I was at that point because, again, I had the church background and really didn't know why I believed what I believed. But I could tell her what I believed, and she challenged me in that. And it was the first time that I opened up my Bible and started reading it and come to find out that it really wasn't about, you know, God wasn't really there for me, but I should be here for Him to use me. And that's when I changed my life and directed it fully towards Him.
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the things you find in the book that's, I mean, really good advice for all of us, because a lot of people, Christians, do what I call missionary dating. They're not a believer, but, you know, I know they told me when we get married, they'll start going to church. That's not what the Marine did. She basically said, hey, I want to find out where you are spiritually before we get married. And once they got together on the same page spiritually, then they were able to move ahead. And that's what it means to be equally yoked. And so that's huge advice, and they modeled that. Your oldest boy is a special needs child and an incredible young man. And one of the things in the book that they said that really caught me off guard, Brenda said, having a special needs child helps me see the needs in each of my children, which I thought was great. We have a special needs ministry here, as you know, and we have some parents, incredible parents with special needs children. Share some of the challenges you go through with that, but also some of the blessings.
Well, any parent of a special needs child will tell you they didn't plan on being a parent of a special needs child. And so, like everybody, when I got pregnant, I dreamed of my son being healthy, growing up to be the football star, driving a car, getting married, having kids. And when he was injured, I realized that, okay, we're going down a different road, and how do you do it? And nobody gave me advice. Nobody came to me and told me how to do this. So I learned as I went. And so I thought, all right, God, you kept him alive, so what's his purpose? Because I believe that I have a purpose, so I knew that he had a purpose. And I had to try and figure that out. When you have brain damage and blindness, you need somebody to come alongside you. And so I started praying that God would help me see his purpose. And then you can't look at that individual and try and figure out their special needs and how God's going to use them unless you do that with all your kids. And I realized that every one of my children have special needs. Some are more obvious. You know, I have a child that's very sensitive. She's a four-year-old twin, and if you talk harshly to her, her whole spirit just breaks. I have to be a better parent to know that I can't be that Marine to that little girl. It just breaks her spirit. And then I have another child that I can be that Marine, and it does not matter. He's not listening to me. And it's not Kurt, but it's a child of mine.
That's good.
You're questionable, though. But, you know, each child has special needs. And so basically just trying to figure out, you know, what God called them to be and helping them come alongside them and helping them figure out what that is.
And that for, you know, man, because, you know, I share with you, I was not good at that. My dad did not creatively look at the special needs of each of us kids growing up. He said, this is it, get in line. And so I tried that with my kids. It worked for him. It didn't work for me. And so I had to make some adjustments. And they have unbelievable advice in this book of how they creatively try to minister to each kid and meet their needs. For example, on the away games for the Cardinals games, Brenda would take each child one at a time, and they would go to each city. They would think in advance what the special needs of that kid were to create. They all had to go to the museum, but she would think ahead of time of things that make that trip special and unique to them. And I thought that was powerful. And that's something, man, you can learn from that. I did not do a good job. All throughout the book, you read the Warner rules, the lists of Warner rules and the different things, which I think was awesome. Where did that come from? What was the purpose of those, Kurt?
Well, they really didn't start as rules. You know, we didn't sit down one day and said, okay, we need to come up with 10 rules for our kids to teach them as they get older. But, you know, over the course of time and with our lifestyle, I think the thing that we realized more than anything was that we were raised completely different. We were in a completely different financial situation, a completely different spotlight, so to speak, when we were growing up. And so there weren't some of the challenges that we deal with. And over the course of time, we just came to realize, you know, we've got to figure out some creative ways to teach our kids in the situation that we're in. And that's how these rules, so to speak, started. That, you know, when the book, you know, when the inspiration for the book, it came from an article. And, you know, the gal that was writing the article just said, well, can you tell us some of your family rules? And, you know, Brendan and I looked at each other and we're like, we don't really have any rules. And then all of a sudden the kids started spouting out, well, we got to do this and this and this and this and this. So we developed the rules from that. But, you know, just little creative, unique things that we developed over the course of time to really instill in our kids the values and the morals we wanted them to have. And the great thing about them is that they're fun and unique, and not everybody does them. So they really stick with our kids. And, you know, one that we love to talk about and has kind of been widely publicized over the last couple years is that when we go out to restaurants, you know, we found out early in this process, you know, when I got into the spotlight a little bit, that I finally had some money, and so we would go out to eat and we could afford it, and it was kind of a neat situation for our family. But every time we went out, you know, as soon as our bill would come, you know, the waiter would come over and say, hey, your bill's been taken care of by the manager or by this family over here because they appreciate what you've done or what you do on the football field. And, you know, it was the first time that we had the opportunity to afford it, and now somebody was taking care of it for us. So we came to understand that old cliche, the rich get richer. And, you know, in that process, you know, we found out that, you know, every time we went, you know, everybody was like, well, it's all about us. You know, everybody wants to take care of our meal. We're so great. We're so this. And so we decided we wanted to flip that around a little bit with our kids. And so we told them every time we go out to a restaurant, we want you guys to look around the restaurant, and we want you to pick out one family and give us a reason why we should pay for their meal. So, you know, they might look around at an elderly couple and say, hey, you know, they just look like a great couple having a great time. Let's buy their meal. Or, you know, there's another family that have 7 kids and it looks like complete chaos. Let's pay for their family. We know what that's like. But it became a fun way for us to focus our kids on somebody besides themselves, because it was so easy for us to get caught up in us. And I think, you know, it's one of those things that we do all the time now. I know because of the book and because it's been publicized, a lot of people have kind of taken that on in their family. But
or you follow us to restaurants, so don't do that. Some people are like, hey.
Pay for me. So it's those kind of things that, you know, we had a purpose in mind, so we created kind of a unique little rule that's become fun for our family, but it really is designed to get our eyes off ourselves and focus on somebody else.
That's great. What's another one of those little rules you do at the restaurant?
Going back to kind of that Marine Corps mentality, I had to learn to respect people. And a lot of times in the Marine Corps, you have to learn to respect the position because you had trouble respecting the person. And I really took that seriously. I really want to teach my kids respect towards others and how to love on them. So one of the rules that they wrote down when they had to write their Warner rules was when they order their chicken nuggets, their spaghetti, they have to turn then and tell me the color of the waiter's eyes. Then I know that they looked that person in the eye, that they weren't looking down at their menu, they weren't disrespecting them. You know, that waiter is there to take our order, but not, you know, subservient. I want them to look in that waiter's eye and be grateful for that waiter. So they have to tell me the color of the waiter's eyes. Granted, the 4-year-olds sometimes go with pink, green, orange, they're not sure. But, you know, someday they'll get it, I believe. And another rule, when I never worked in food service, but I get the impression that people don't like tables with 7 kids. I don't know. But we get that kind of look, like, don't give them to me, don't give them to me. And so when we get to a table, I want that waiter to not feel like this is a horrible experience. So our kids have to kind of clean up the mess. They, you know, have to pick up the crayons. They have to stack their plates. Just try and make it a little bit better for the people that come behind us. And at movie theaters, they have to take their garbage to the garbage dump themselves. They don't leave it there. And now it's kind of funny because our oldest son got a job at Harkins Theater, and he picks up the garbage after everybody else. So, you know, just little things to kind of show people respect, and that's important to me as a parent.
And I think one of the things, too, I don't mean to interrupt, okay. But, you know, the ironic thing is that, you know, we start these rules for our kids, but, you know, she says, well, we have them look at the color of the eyes of the waiter, and it's amazing how many times she looks at me and says, what color were the waiter's eyes? And I'm like, I don't know. pink or green? I don't know. You know, but it's funny because as much as they're parenting techniques, they're also ways for us as parents to be an example to our kids. You know, they remind us continually of how we need to live, what we need to do, how we need to respect other people,
right.
Because we've realized that the greatest thing we can do for our kids is be a daily example for them.
That's great. You know, George Barna last week was talking about statistics say that the average parent spends less than 15 minutes a day interacting with their kids. And one of the things that I think is incredible that they really made priority in their home is that you had a family dinner together every day. Everybody has to show up. And man, when I think of your schedule, we all think we're busy. Your schedule's got to be incredible. How in the world did you pull that off? And why did you make that a priority?
Well, like you said, the only way we could pull it off was by making it a priority. You know, letting our kids know that they had to be home every day for dinner. You know, unless there was some extenuating circumstance, but they had to be home every day for dinner. Obviously, if they were going to be there, we had to make sure we were there. So, you know, it became a priority. And, you know, the thing we realized with seven kids ranging from age 21 all the way down to 4, that everybody's got different things that they want to do, different agendas, you know, different focuses. And it's hard to stay up with all of your kids. It's hard to have time with every one of your kids every day to figure out what's going on. So what we realized is that dinner time became our opportunity to stay in communication with our kids. You know, we always want to talk and know what our kids are doing and what they're going through, and it's so hard. You know, we had a teenage daughter that, you know, you'd always try to talk to her, but the only time you could talk to her is when she came home at 9 o'clock at night, and we were too old, so we were already in bed by that time. So, you know, so we got to the point where dinner time became that communication time, where we got to have everybody sit down. You know, they couldn't, you know, they weren't on their cell phones, they weren't texting, they weren't doing anything else other than sitting down, and we were communicating, we were talking, we were finding out what was going on in their life, what they were going to be doing, what, you know, what they enjoyed that day, or, you know, they found out what their siblings were doing, and it connected us in a special way because, you know, it wasn't like we were all different entities in one house. We would all come together and get united at the dinner table.
Right.
And, you know, regardless of how good or bad the food was, and, you know, regardless. I didn't say anything about you.
Go on.
Jeez. Regardless of.
You are starting early. Go ahead.
Our series on marriage will take next week. We're going to start a new series on revolutionary marriage.
But regardless of all those other things, you know, good or bad day at school, you know, what was going on in their life, that we would all come together, and it was a great way for us to uplift one another, encourage one another, and really communicate and find out what's going on in each other's lives.
Brenda, what are some of those rules you had around the table?
Well, you have to hold hands with the person next to you and pray. And with those ages, you can imagine how the girl does not want to hold hands and get cooties from the brother and all that. But that is our rule. No matter who's visiting, they hold hands. No matter if we're at a restaurant, you hold hands. I just want us to connect. And then we go around and we say the best part of our day. We used to say the lowest part of our day, just be able to share. But that usually involved a sibling, so then that started a whole other thing.
Or a wife.
So we tell the highlight of the day, and you can imagine when you're 4, you know, what your highlight is. It might be, you know, something in the sandbox, and then, you know, the 9-year-old girl had a great hair day. But The point of it is that I want them to bring something to the table. I want them to know that when it comes dinner time, to be ready to go with something that was a highlight. Get your mind on the positive and share it with us. I want them to try and convince us that it was the best part of their day. They can't just say recess. They have to tell us, you know, about something that's happened. And I'm believing that'll give them confidence to be able to, you know, share things with people, to be able to interact, be able to look people in the eye, and that's just one of our rules.
Awesome. And they can't leave before everybody's done eating?
Right. Now, that's a hard one because, you know, you want to hurry up and get going to other things. You know, you showed up, so you think that's good enough, but then you have to wait until the last person. So sometimes even we are sitting there like to the four-year-olds, come on, eat those nuggets. And sometimes, you know, one of us will say, I'll take a bite just to hurry it up. But, you know, it's just respect. It's respect to each other. You wait until the last person's done.
So, some of you are out there saying, oh, that's really good. But, man, we have teenagers, and there's no way that would be cool that our teenagers are going to come home every day to eat with us. You had teenagers. How did you handle that?
Yeah, it wasn't cool in our house either.
she didn't like it.
You know, it was amazing. You know, our daughter's off to college now, but it's amazing how much she complained about that exact thing, having to come home every day for dinner because her friends were always going somewhere. They, you know, there was a game to be seen. There was friends to be hanging out with. And so she never wanted to come home for dinner. And, you know, we were on vacation with her and a few of her girlfriends just a few weeks ago. And, you know, we were kind of talking about growing up and, you know, things that had changed now that they were all in college and what they appreciated about growing up. And one of the things my daughter said was, I hated that I had to come home for dinner every single day because I missed out on so much because of that. And, you know, she was doing her complaining, and then we went around to all of her friends, and every single one of her friends said, the greatest thing we appreciated about your household, meaning our household, was the fact that you guys ate dinner together every single night. We wanted to come home with Jesse to have dinner with you guys because we knew everybody was going to be there. We were going to get to meet your kids and find out about their day and what was going on. And we missed out on that because, you know, our parents weren't together or they were going different directions or they had other priorities. And they appreciated that more than anything else. And it was kind of eye-opening to our daughter because she looked at it as a negative while everybody around her saw the positive part of that and the impact that it had on our family.
Wow. And I would say that is just a powerful illustration and example for all of us. I didn't do that with our kids that much, and my wife wanted to, and I wish I would have. So I'm kind of confessing here today. you guys are Christ followers. How are you? What strategy are you using to transfer your Christian values to your kids?
Well, I mean, I've come to realize that, you know, a lot of people when they hear me or see me, I find it out in, you know, in the locker room that everybody has this persona of, you know, me being a Christian and what I'm going to be like. You know, that I'm going to have my Bible in my hand all the time, that I'm going to be in the locker room standing up on a chair and just yelling scripture out, you know, hour after hour, you know, and that's the kind of person I'm going to be. And, you know, I think a lot of people expect that same thing at home with us and our kids. And I think what we've realized is that, yeah, we have our time when we read the Bible or we have our time of prayer, you know, meals or before bed, you know, go to church, do all of those things. But for us, the greatest thing has been understanding that our kids are watching even more than they're listening to us. You know, my wife and I talk about it all the time that, you know, she'll say something to me and she knows I'm thinking about something else. And she's like, you're not listening to me. What did I say? And I can repeat her verbatim exactly what she said, but I wasn't listening to a word she had to say. You know, I could just repeat it just to, you know, appease her, but I'm not really listening and, you know, taking it all in. And I think our kids are the same way, is they hear us, but they're not really listening to us. And what we've realized is that they are watching everything that we do. And the greatest thing that we can do as followers of Jesus and as examples of Jesus is live that out every single day.
Yeah.
And to do it in a positive way. And, you know, I was thinking about this last night after a couple of the services. I remember one time when, you know, I was sitting in the living room with, you know, my kids, and it was actually my four-year-old twins that were three at the time. And one of them made the other one mad. And, you know, I saw the interaction take place, and then one of them, you know, walked out of the room, and I thought, that was kind of interesting. It kind of stopped. They weren't screaming at each other. And she came back into the room, and she had a wooden spoon in her hand. And she went over to her sister and said, you were bad, and hit her with the wooden spoon. And I got to thinking, oh, my goodness, they are They are picking up everything that we do. But that's what you come to realize, is they watch everything that you do. And you've got to be very careful with those, with those kinds of things. And that's been, for us, I think, the greatest thing that we've learned is that they want to see us live, you know, like Jesus every single day. Right. And that's what they pick up on, and that's what hangs with them.
I'm really, it's encouraging to know that there's another man that has the same discipline I do, you know. Hit him again, harder, harder. No, whatever. But we'll talk about that next week. Brenda, anything else with transferring your values?
Well, for years we tried, I don't know how many kids, we've had so many, but maybe we had two or three, and we would, you know, sit down and open the Bible and lose their attention after about 3 minutes and fight them, you know, listen, and like Kurt said, I realized over the years that the best way to show them is to live it out. But over the years, when our son, being special needs, he started getting on that little short bus at 3 years old. And I remember thinking, I want to put something in them that they're going to take with them. And so I found these verses, and I put them together in a kid-friendly way. And so early on, I would say the sentence and they would repeat it. There's four sentences. Then they'd get a little older and they'd be able to say the second half of the sentence. And then now they're able to tell me the sentence. And the four sentences are, I'm the head and not the tail. I'm above and not below. I will find favor with man and God. I was created in the image of God to do good things and to love people. And they don't have a clue those are things from the Bible. No idea. But those are the things that I want them to get deep down in their soul. So wherever they are, away from us, they will know those to be true. And then when they realize someday that they're from the Bible, they'll be like, the Bible's true. Yeah. You know, instead of just teaching them the scripture, the words, I want it to get down in them. And so that's just something that we do. And, you know, even our 21-year-old son has memorized it over the years. It took him 20 years to memorize it. And I don't care. You know, he's got it in him. And Kurt tells a funny story about our daughter, because you try so hard to, like I'm saying, to be so spiritual and get it in them. You want to share the story about Jesse Joe?
So, like she said, she gets our kids to say that every single day. And so our oldest daughter, again, she's not real athletic. She was more of kind of into drama and all of that. So she never did a lot of athletic activities. And so one day she had to go to school, and they had a running test in their PE class. So she had to run like a mile and beat a certain time, and she was all discouraged and you know, going to school and just kind of beat up by it. And you know, her mom, as she was walking down the driveway, was yelling out, "You're the head and not the tail." And you know, she's kind of yelling it back and repeating it, and you know, and then you know, before she said, she goes, "Remember, you were made in the image of God." And my daughter yells back, "Well, obviously God isn't athletic." You know, but again, it's, you know, a funny one of those stories that we come to find out is something that's ingrained in them, and they believe it. And even when they're having a bad day or they don't feel like it, you know, they're leaving understanding that God has a plan, has a purpose, that he loves them, and they are created in his image to do great things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thy word have I hid in my heart, that I might not sin against God. That's what she's doing, in planting the word. Last thing, if you had to say, maybe here's one thing I would say to parents today, to be revolutionary parents, make a difference, what advice would you give them if you had to pick one thing?
You know, I would say that, you know, I heard a coach say one time that you can't treat all your players the same. You can't coach them all the same. And I think sometimes as parents, we think that we have to do the exact same thing with every one of our kids. And, you know, we have a saying, you know, in our family, you know, our kids are always saying, you know, life's not fair. And we always tell them, you're right, life's not fair. And that's just the way it is. And we've come to realize, I think, in our parenting that life's not fair and it's not always equal. That we've got to learn how to discipline, how to teach, how to encourage each one of our kids differently. And I think that would be my encouragement to all the parents out there, is come to understand what it takes to teach your kids, to parent your kids. You know, not my kids, you know, not in a cookie cutter manner that says these are five steps of parenting. We've come to find out that we've got to parent every one of our kids differently. And it's important that we figure out what those things are so that we can be the best parent for our 21-year-old kid with special needs.
Right.
Or our teenage daughter. Or our 4-year-old twins that are completely different. Right. We've got to parent sometimes in different ways, unique ways, fun ways that allow them to become everything God's created them to be.
Awesome. What would you say, Brenda?
Along with that, I would say that I want my kids to know that no matter what, we will love them. No matter what they do, no matter how many times they mess up. And, you know, I was raised with parents that I knew that. I knew it. I mean, I had to move back several times when I had to start over. I screwed it up and had to start over. I want my kids to know that home is a soft place to fall. They're always welcome. That they cannot do so much wrong that I will shut that door. And, you know, my Heavenly Father loves me like that. So I want to love my kids like that and let them truly know that they're loved deep down and they can't mess that up.
Awesome. Guys, thanks. You got a busy schedule. Five services kills anybody off. So thanks for coming. And I pray that God would bless your ministry, your family, more in this season of your life than he ever did while you were playing football. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Remain standing, if you would, just for 1 minute. We're going to wrap this up. Just hang tight. If you're a first-time guest, we're honored to have you here. We have a special gift for you. If you would go outside to the information area, you'll see that. Please stop by and pick that up. Maybe you have questions about the ministry here. You have questions about your own spiritual journey. What's my next adventure as a Christian? How do I learn more about this? Starting point is next week. We answer those questions. On the back, it talks about all the adult sports you can get involved in. You don't have to be a member of CCV. It's a good chance to meet some neighbors and friends and take advantage of those. I want to encourage you to do that. This past week, I get nothing for this advertisement. This past week, my son made me aware of a movie entitled The Human Experience. It's only showing on this side of town at Harkins Arrowhead. And all of our family, grandkids, except for the two youngest grandkids, went to that last week. If you want to have a movie that will have you stop and talk about values, basic values to raise your kids, just things to think about in life, I highly recommend that. It's probably going to be in town for about a week. You probably never heard of it. It's called The Human Experience, Harkins at Arrowhead. I would encourage you to check it out this week. I think it'll be a great teaching moment. Next week, we continue the series. We're going to talk about drawing lines in the sand. A lot of us struggle as parents. How do you discipline? What's the right way? Boundaries. How do we do that? And I'm going to have my wife up here with me because it wouldn't take me 30 minutes to tell you how to discipline your kids, okay? Just work them over in Jesus' name, all right? And so she'll come alongside and say, whoa, there's a different way, and we're having to learn some things together over the years. And so we're going to share together from the Bible, what does it say about boundaries, about discipline? That's where a lot of parents struggle. And so we're going to share you some of the things that we've done there as well. So I want to encourage you, come back, bring a friend. We really want to help you raise great families to the glory of God. Great cafes going, grills going, beautiful day. Take time, meet some friends. Bring a friend back with you next week as we celebrate the great things God's doing. Thanks for coming. Have a great week.
Searching for this answer that only will be found in your love.